views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
All right, this is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox. Today is May 9th, 2017. I got DC on the line and T. We're going to be discussing the American colony, developing an empire. Some of our discussion points are going to be black oppression and profit, ghettoizing the planet, born, compromise, kind of racism, some behavior patterns, and also I think there's a it's a show out for a movie or something called Assassin's Creed. We might touch on about France and some new show out called American Gods as well. It has some small illustrations of racism. Fellas, are you there?
Here.
Yes, sir. Present. What's going on? Right. Hope everybody's doing well.
And one thing real quick, you can reach us at Twitter at CodeBreakers191. And, of course, always you can go to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com and to find our programs and others as well. All right, fellas, how are you guys holding up in this environment?
As good as could be expected. As good as could be expected.
Yeah.
Woke.
There's a lot going on out there. Always, right?
Yeah, a lot going on. Even in the news, FBI director fired. FBI director fired.
Yeah. And I'm sure they have a long list. No shortage of people that want to practice.
Well, they want to track somebody down for the reason why Donald Trump is in office right now. So I guess that's the reason for it all rolls downhill. You know how power rolls.
Well, you know what's funny is that like I keep saying it's I don't know what word to use because you know we're trapped in this language, but I tell you, boy, by putting him in office, it definitely creates exposure. It definitely helps see some things that typically is tucked away. You're not getting much, but I think you are getting a lot. Relatively speaking, I think you're getting a lot just to see how media functions, how other whites react to other whites. It's just interesting. I mean, there's so many levels to it. There's so many layers to it. But I do think that we are getting just a little bit behind the curtain. Not much. There's a lot of confusion still, and the way people are interpreting it, they're really, it's kind of funny you said that because they kind of interpreted, I think, some people anyway, you know, they really focus on that one person and really don't look at the how the overall thing is operating and just how that the system itself, called it the American Empire, just how it can handle these things where everybody's panicking You know, I've already told a few people, like, settle down. Ain't nothing happened in my mind, right? This is normal. This is what it looks like when you're running an empire that controls the whole planet, right? You know, it's a funny thing because when you're at this level, when you're at the lowest level and you're interacting, you know, it's in this country anyway. I don't know about the rest of the world, but it always seems like they put you in this energy of everything is coming to an end. Everything is coming to an end. You know, always, you know, always frantic, right? Someone's trying to bomb you, invade you, attack you. And it's a constant feel that you can get in some spaces, obviously not all spaces, but in some spaces. And it's like, this is ridiculous. You know, they've established something. This is what it looks like when you're managing multiple nations. You know what I'm saying? When you're dealing with inner space, outer space, controlling waterways, airspace, et cetera. This is what it looks like. So it's interesting. I will say that when you're managing this level or this size of an empire, it's fascinating. But anyway, not to ramble too much, guys. I apologize.
No, it's cool. It's interesting how they have set up false paradigms in which people argue in circles, speaking on language in particular, obviously. And with respect to one of the topics that was posed is ghettoizing the planet, if you want to go there, if you want to get into it. You know, when you talk to people and they say things as if it, you know, with relative ease without even thinking about it. So they'll say, you know, first world, second world, third world country. We touched on this before. And well, the question is, why is that called a third world, sir? And oh, well, you know, they don't have the resources and the wealth that we have. When I say we, I'm talking about the landmass known as the U.S. or the U.S., the USA. Why don't they have the resources and wealth that the USA have? Why is that? But those questions are never posed. And it'd be interesting to find out in the echo chambers of the vaunted halls of mainstream media what the answer would be to something like that. But the point is that they set up the false paradigm, you know, you use these terms and these words and with each other without even delving into what you're really saying, what you really mean when you're saying it. The clip that, this might be going a little bit off topic, but the clip that DC shared, what we shared amongst ourselves on, what's it called, Darkism?
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, sir.
That's it.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Rashida, shout out to Rashida Strobe. She is the one that coined the term darkism. So go ahead. Yes, sir.
Right. So darkism, and I'm going to try to explain the best I can, but the term that she coined, which is relative to darker skinned or highly melanated individuals, their experiences of racism, as a contrast up against, and no pun intended, lighter skinned or fairer skinned people who she, based on what I've read and researched, she doesn't consider to be black. So you're looking kind of like at a intersectionality type of creation there. Obviously the term intersectionality was created by a woman classified as black. The problem, and I'm not saying that these don't have practical application, because there are, as I said, circles within circles. So there are levels of oppression within levels of oppression within levels of oppression. So defining and fleshing out those particular levels with terminology, which I think is a great thing, and treating terms around that, definitions and language around it, I think it's a great thing, but I think it can be detrimental too in terms of causing more confusion. And not only that, it's interesting how the mainstream, the dominant society aka white society, to sit back and let a so-called black person espouse and talk about these different things. And they'll let them come up with these ideas and flesh these different things out and explain them. And they will, at some point, grab a hold of that and take it to another extent, such as the case with intersectionality. So that, I think that is an issue. But the point being, darkism, I think, is a, just by arguing levels of oppression, getting to levels of, I should say, oppression Olympics, is setting up a false dichotomy, because you're arguing from a point of classifying people. We don't have that. We simply don't have that capability to classify people. And so, since we don't have the power to do that, we're grabbing at straws. We're grabbing at straws.
Well, you know, that some people would say that if you say that, that if you say that we don't have the ability to call ourselves black or to define what black is, then that means that you're falling victim to the white system itself, brother. So how can you even talk about any kind of a resistance when you are falling to the ideals of so-called white supremacy? I'm being facetious here, but AKA the so-called one drop rule. I really do believe that people believe that there's some called one drop. Also, I think they misunderstood what the whole premise of it was. But yeah, you know, like that whole one drop rule, and you know, I don't subscribe to the one drop rule, in my opinion. So yeah, some people would actually say that what you're stating, T, is not something that should go forward. We should resist and fight for fragments within the so-called non-white people classification of race called black people, that we should have a stopping point. Some people have coined it, I hear it on internet circles, called reorganizing a race. So what say you right on that? Just playing devil's advocate, well, but you know how I feel about that. But
yeah, no, that's perfect, because that is exactly what I guess I was trying to get across, is that they've created the idea of race, the idea of black and white race, and so these are ideas that have been created. They haven't been created by black people, but they've been forced upon and assigned to black people. So they've created the identity for you. And, of course, being the resilient people that we are, we found ways to create culture and create different aspects around that identity that was essentially forced upon us at the outset. So, of course, someone would definitely cling to the identity of blackness, because there are a lot of things that are attached to that, without examining the fact that it's something that's a force classification. And so when you get into debates with people, or you get into arguments, or you get into discussions about race, it's a false paradigm from the beginning, from the outset. It's like talking about, you know, we get into the economics thing, but it's like talking about what we call money, which is paper. These are the paper. It only has value because people believe it does. But at the end of the day, if I use that cliche, when it hits the fan, people can actually live without it. If there was a natural disaster to happen tomorrow, it would probably be the last thing on people's mind. So when you get down to the reality of things, and you take away the, because essentially what has been done is there's been a template that has been laid over reality. And so social media is an example of that. People actually, I'm kind of getting off to a tangent, but I think it drives home my point. People actually derive their ego, they derive pleasure, they derive sadness, they derive entertainment. You name it, it can be derived through social media. And it's what it is. It's a false paradigm, because there is obviously reality that exists outside of this nexus, this web of communication that has been set up. And so I use that to say that I think a further examination of the force classification, which is a false paradigm, blackness, just like social media is, delving deeper into it, the reasonings behind it, how we can maybe even forge an identity outside of that. I don't know if that's going to be helpful at all, but just even understanding what it is that you're actually dealing with, I think is very helpful, because falling into those circles of arguing about or debating within those false paradigms, it really doesn't get anywhere, because it's already set up for you to fail. It's like a failure device that's already set in place.
There are over... Yeah, oh, absolutely. You're making perfect sense. There are over 3,000 languages spoken in Africa, as told by white people. I would imagine that it's probably 10 times, 15 times that. We're not even talking about the languages that have now become extinct. If you extrapolate that with languages being people's culture and the way that the mind develops pure parts of the language and how people dream and they create their realities through their dream state, if you have taken a people outside of the original inhabitants and created something else or put them somewhere else and have them speak differently, then technically they're different than even the people that they're actually related to by blood, by first generation. Hence the reason why you get people that are so-called or called immigrants, people that become black when they come over here, or if they, you know, whatever they identify as, you know, people have their own identity. When they come over here to the so-called HQ, and they get indoctrinated with the programming of, you know, upward and, you know, forward, but they get held down by the so-called descendants of slaves, blackness, you know, false paradigm, then you could see how this kind of works into favor and works into place. See, because what they have created, and I think that this caused basically what I call blackness fatigue, people that get fatigued by fighting the system, because at the end of the day, I think that we can come to some conclusions. This system won't end unless it's through extreme violence, or that it's extreme collapse. It's not going to be an ideal fight. Ideas would not end the system of racism, white supremacy. I am with the idea that you can counter through action, but your action will be met with violence. For instance, if people decide tomorrow that the economic system doesn't mean anything anymore, then guess what? Military will be invoked. And I'm pretty sure they have all kinds of, what you call that, you know, test runs where they have basically probably test where they were. If there is a situation of collapse, they probably have it in every state, every city, every province of what to do. If that does happen, if there's some kind of chaotic event, the electricity goes out, the grid goes out, you can't use money anymore, of a way of keeping order, because people have guns. And I think that this is something that is very, very not thought about on a regular basis, that at the end of the day, this system was brought forward through extreme violence. Once you become the victor of said system, of said belief system, you can also start to define things. So things got defined for us before we was even here. And that includes everybody that's on the continent of so-called Africa or any other place around this planet. So what you have now, just alluding to what you was just saying, T, is that we are living in a so-called false paradigm. But what do we do now? What do we do about it? And see, I think that's where a lot of victims of racism, because we are in an information age, and, you know, some people process information differently. you know, and I am under not the impression, but I believe that the system has done so much mental damage to the people that are forced into the classification of blacks that we need. There seems to be not no way out, but there seems to be a situation where there has to be an awakening overall that we all have to agree with. And I don't know what that would entail. I don't have the answers when it comes down to that. Just looking at the broadness of how the system has basically went over the globe and how they have dominated all different types of people. I know it sounds like a doom and gloom, and I don't mean to sound like that, but just pay attention to what you're looking at. Just think about what language you're talking. Think about how you think about things. Think about what you view, the reason why we fight. We're fighting over colorism, and we're describing each other based off what somebody has already assigned us. So we're going and looking at people in Africa and saying, well, if you don't look like this, then you're not them. When you basically are imposing your white supremacist covering and conditioning onto tribal people, whether they're Zulu, Xhosa, the Mende people. I mean, you're erasing a whole tribal culture and trying to apply something that is based off an assignment, a destination. You know, and we're not trying to debate whether blackness exists. We know that it exists, but it only exists due to the system of racism, white supremacy. People that are classified as black are not technically, in reality, black people. Black people is not a real thing, just like whiteness is not a real thing. But it is real. See, that's what makes this thing difficult. So it's almost like you're living within a fictional book, a false reality, so to speak. So, you know, we can get deeper into it. Paradox, did you have anything you wanted to add on to that?
I mean, you said what you said, yeah. We can keep it moving. Good information, you know, very organized. So, you know, I followed the logic as best as I could. I mean, I don't think I have, you know, any real pushback for the most part when it comes to trying to just understand the challenges that we're going to have or that we've had from the time that, that the European came to this land. So, you know, we've had to deal with them developing a system, as you say, but then expanding that system from coast to coast, you know, from north to south, and then continuing on from there. So, yeah, that's all I'll say about that. I'll plug in some other stuff. I don't want to jump. I don't want to go too far up. You know, I was telling someone today, you know, we're living, you know, you're having to deal with multiple realities when you're trying to, in my opinion, when you're trying to engage some of this stuff. And so, you know, my individual reality and how I interact so I can eat and live and function is one thing, you know, family reunions, you know, living my life, going to work, you know, doing my business thing, doing this and doing that. That's one thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have other realities that you also have to deal with and trying to get an understanding of what I would call an empire and what that looks like and what does that mean when you just so happen to be living in a time that, which is crazy when you think about it, you happen to be born in a time where you're even allowed to know this information. You know, I find that in itself interesting, and it scares me, obviously, because, you know, when, you know, I'm not saying when we was in bondage, we wasn't aware, But when you're isolated, you don't have necessarily access to information. And I know people now who have access to information who don't really know a lot of things. So if you don't have any information, I really know how far away from reality. Someone can pretty much create the reality for you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And when you dealt with that for such a long time, and everyone who's listening should be highly suspicious of the internet and of every in books and data and statistics. You should be highly suspicious of me and everything.
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to put that out there, just because when you are allowed to do some of these things, it does make it does challenge your reality. Because we're able to talk about these things, and how can things be as bad as I might claim? You know, and the reason why that is, obviously, if you get a following, if you get people showing up and doing things, you will be, you know, you don't even have to go that far. You will be, you know, you will get some attention. I'll just say it that way. You know, you will get a little bit of attention. I don't want to ramble too much, but.
So I was having. I apologize because I really want to get this out, and I really want everybody to understand where we're coming from. We're coming from a macro perspective. We understand that people deal with things and that Black people have to survive, people that are classified as Black or any other people that are not classified as white. Hell, even white people themselves. You got to do whatever you got to do to survive in this system. You still have to feed. It is what it is. But I was having a brief argument with someone, and somebody told me that I think very, very small, and that I should read the book Think and Grow Rich.
Think and Grow Rich, yeah.
Napoleon Hill. So let me
Napoleon
give you an
Hill.
Idea. This is what kills me. Because I think that this person thought that Napoleon Hill was a Black person. And I just looked at them. I said, do you know who Napoleon Hill is? Do you know the lineage of this person? Napoleon Hill, born October 26, 1883. Pound, Virginia. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, this stuff, you can't make up some of this stuff that we are. And I hear it all the time. And you're stuck in the past, this and that other. But you tell me to read a book called Think and Grow Rich, written by a racist white supremacist born in Pound, Virginia. And I swear that this person thought that they were talking about a Black person. And I just let them ramble. And see, I don't mean to go in on victims, but see, this is the thing. We are not in reality. The system that they have formatted on us is a basic old mentality system. You could get people that are classified as white, people that run corporations, people that run businesses. It's a very, very old model, which comes basically right off the plantation. If you notice, this man was born 20 years after the so-called Emancipation Proclamation. Literally. So what do you think his parents were doing in Virginia? Anyway, so we have... We have Daniel Carnegie too, right? Daniel Carnegie. How to think and how to make friends. And then we have the more modern day person, Robert Greene, but people talk about 48 Laws of Power, where the whole book is based off deceiving and manipulation. See, this is what I want to say though. And I'm gonna leave it at that, and we can dig into it. I don't understand why Black people want to be white. See, because we're not going to sit up here and preach to you about what you should and shouldn't do. This, we're so beyond that now that it's not even funny. We're way beyond the pale when it comes down to what Black people should be doing. I can't tell you that because at this moment, it's all about survival. Do the best you can do. But I tell you what. I'm not going to do. I'm not going to deceive. I'm not going to deceive Black people because that 48 Laws of Power, that shit don't. I mean, let me not do that. That don't work unless it works on other who. Who can we practice that on? 48 laws of power? Are you kidding me? Are you even close to a white person to even practice some of that? Come on, man. 48 Absolutely. Laws of power?
Absolutely.
By Robert Greene. Look up these authors. Look what they do. I mean, we're
look what they do. Look at what it's producing.
But you know, the interesting thing about that, there are power, so-called power plays. Depends on how you define the word power. Okay, to get in language again, but there are so-called power plays that you can make and moves that you can make.
Get into that real quick.
Yeah, there are certain moves and that you can make within that ideology that they've written. Because, I mean, first of all, that book is based on the court, the king's court, right? That is the essence of what it's based in, you know, as far as
are these black people?
In the king's court?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I really don't know. I don't know how many so-called black people. Did he have foreign dignitaries and people visit? I don't know.
Do they benefit the people that are classified as black? Have they been able to protect themselves due to some of this actual information that's been put forth?
Maybe not protect at a certain level, but it has, I'm sure it has let some people classified as black advance within corporate world. I'm convinced of that. Now, on a larger level, you know, as far as obtaining huge masses and sums of wealth and, you know, moving nations to do different things, no. But being honest, I think that's part of the problem is that there are realities within realities. So when you're talking with someone, you're basically, your reality is butting up against their reality. And most of the time when we talk to people, we're talking to them to try to convince them of our side, of our reality. And therein lies, I think, part of the problem, because what you believe to be true is your reality. You know, I'm not saying it's the disparaging one, but you do. But there have been individuals who have, and I'm not saying this to down social media, but there are individuals who have committed suicide, killed themselves over social media bullying. That might not be the right terminology that they use, but
cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying. In my mind, turn the computer off, turn the phone off. You can turn that stuff off. It's not like, you know, it's to the point where you fed into it so much that it has consumed you. And so that is their reality. It has been created, but it has been created by someone else. So that's the issue when you talk about that book and someone tells you, oh, well, my reality is based upon Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich or the 16 Law. I can't think of his other book, 16 Laws of Power of Success or something like that. And you say, well, look, you know, that's written by a white supremacist, someone born in Virginia in the 1880s, you know, not too long after slavery was supposedly ended. And they say, well, what are you talking about?
Their reality is not your reality. It's just... Go ahead, Paradox. You was about to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was I thinking that hard? I guess you could feel me on that. I don't even know what to say outside of I mean, it's interesting. I do think people are in different thoughts, and obviously that's I think to benefit this environment, it's important for people to obviously have different approaches, different thoughts to how they're going to live their life, and the environment allows a certain amount of those scenarios to take place. So that's pretty obvious. But when we're starting to get into discussing a group of people who have over, you know, over so many years have taken control of a planet is a different conversation in my mind. It's all connected, obviously, but that's a different conversation. That's where I like to live at as much as I can. But I do know things do get personal. So when you're looking at a group of people who have developed an environment to control the planet.
Exactly, it's management.
Anything below that has less relevancy. I do think you need to deal with individual people who are struggling with the environment, and that's where people like Dr. Welding and others come into play. That's not where I'm at. I'm not here to save nobody. I'm not here to be followed by nobody either. I'm more or less just want to discuss points of view and just kind of look at things and just see. You try to create some clarity, at least try to challenge some things. And I think that when you're looking at a group of people who somehow hijacked the planet and you got billions of people participating, and the way it was done, how it was done, and then how it gets attacked, and then how it counters those attacks, if people aren't discussing it and focusing on the people who are running this planet, you are wasting your time, in my opinion. I think you're wasting a lot of your time, maybe not all your time. You still got to take care of your children. You still got to get them to be able to live and survive in the environment, and it's difficult. And that's what makes a lot of this, I think, very hard, is because you're living a reality, which is you living in the system in 2017, and whatever comes at you, you got to deal with. You also are given so-called opportunity that you want to take advantage of. There's things set up for you to exploit. And the bigger question, like I was telling DC earlier, the biggest question is, and this is just a question, you know, why do you want to practice capitalism? You know, why, you know, and then when I say that, let's walk that back. We don't really have to do historical stuff. We can talk about things that happened just today. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen in the future, all the future plans, things that are structured that's going to be deployed in the next 50 years. Like, we've never had to talk about that. What's so funny about an empire that's a real thing that you're really living in and that you're really dealing with, you literally don't have to talk about history. You can actually talk about today and all the forecasting that they've done for the next 50 and the next 100 years. That's what's interesting. That's one thing. You know, the other thing I think is that when you're dealing with an empire, when you're dealing with a group of people who figured something out and been able to exploit the planet, and we're not really trying to really grasp that concept because you're too busy practicing capitalism, which is okay, right? It occupies the most of your space. It occupies a ton of your space. And it comes in so many forms, from organic grocery shopping, organic farming, that you can get manipulated into that environment, or trying to go and find oil, or trying to start, you know, a hair salon, or whatever you're trying to do. Do what you got to do, but understanding what does that mean, and I think what typically happens when you're in a certain position within America, specifically America, that's what I can talk about. When you're in a certain position here, you may not ever ask the questions about, say if I wanted to open up a barbershop, I'm never going to ask this question because I'm in the system, I'm living my life, and I'm functioning. I'm going to stop right here. You never ask, you know, I don't think anyway, maybe you do, I don't know, who built the parking lot? What land was this before? Who put the building here? And then when you get the barbershop and you set it up, who made all the clippers? And then where did those metals come from? Who dug those metals out the ground? You know what I mean? Like, when you get down to minerals and understanding what is required to even have this kind of civilization, the amount of extraction out of the planet. And again, people really may not care, and it really may not resonate. Like, what does that even mean? What are you even talking about? You know, when you have to destroy entire forests, when you have to destroy entire mountain ranges, when you have to kill all of the animals, and when you have to set up things and put people, you know, when you have to create a civilization based off of the European mindset, I guess, Maybe it came from other places. I don't know. It's all interconnected somehow. But when you're coming from that, I don't know. Like I said, I'm just kind of thinking, like, looking at resources, you know, how many humans does it take that have to die to make America exist is my point. To get the barbershop, to get the grocery store, to do the farming, to do oil, to do gold, to do just basic things, building microphones, making plastic bottles, whatever you're trying to do. What is the human cost? What group of people on the planet do you have to suppress, oppress, murder, kill, move, push around to get you a cup of coffee? But in your mind, you want to open up a Starbucks, right? I mean, like, there's so many different ways to look at it. And people, not necessarily the people who are listening necessarily, but, I mean, when you think about it, you know, you have to make hard decisions. We're not necessarily thinking about, not us, let me not say it that way. Some people are not necessarily thinking about what is the cost for me to live where I live. And it doesn't matter if you're living in the poorest areas or the richest areas. What does it cost for all these things to be working? Is anyone suffering for these things to work? But I'll hold right there. I can talk about that obviously forever because it's when you're looking at resources and what's required.
Just before you go,
we're talking about stuff that don't even really.
Go ahead.
I was going to say just right quick the question about, you know, why do you want to practice capitalism? I mean, I'm not sure what vein you intended it, but I mean, it's not like people have a choice, you know. People are forced into the system, obviously. So that's like, to me, that's a rhetorical question, you know.
Everything is to a degree. Everything is a degree. So you can not to get too deep into the weeds on it, but you can limit something, you can support something. You as a personal, individual person, you can give energy to certain things, and you can be anti-certain things. You can push back on certain things, even if you're trapped clearly in an environment. It's not like you still can't push against things. You still can't explain things to people. You still can't say, you know what, I know I'm in a system of racism. I know that white folks have went around this planet and murdered billions of people. I know that white folks are benefiting the most from murdering people and from destroying the planet. Facts. They're the ones who have a trash problem. They're the ones who set up other nations to produce things that don't recycle itself, where you had people in ancient times who figured out ways to live with the land or to figure out ways to recycle things, to where you got a group of people who are figuring out ways to monetize everything. I don't want to go down there, though. My bad. But I just say that. I'll leave it there. I don't even want
to. I just wanted to clarify. I understand.
No, I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, outside of survival, I believe that black people should limit their suggestions when it comes down to, you know, the economic model. And I say that for one particular reason. What I have found to be fairly accurate due to our fractures in reality, because we are living in the system of racism, white supremacy, built primarily on the psychosis of its victims that are designated at the bottom floor. I think that we do not understand that we, people that have been forced into the classification of black, I want people to hear me very, very clearly. We have been used physically, mentally as a model of debasement. People call it the canary in a coal mine. That is it. All the medical experiments that you have here, all of the labor that was used to build this particular country, the financial systems, the different mentalities of degradation that is used when these so-called European white people, Andrew Carnegie, Robert Greene, which came later, and Napoleon Hill, if you talk to to victims of racism, because that's what we are at the end of the day. And you ask them, do you know who Napoleon Hill is, actually? Do you actually? I think people read the book and they think that it was written 20 years ago. I mean, like, literally. Literally, they believe these things. I mean, I can hear the person repeating and I'm just looking at them. Like, because to me, why are you trying to sell me something? You're broke just like I am. I can see you. I know who you are. I talk to you on a regular basis.
What did the conversation what is go that? Like? I mean,
I'm saying I let the person talk because at the end of the day, I just asked questions about, you know, are you talking about Napoleon Hill? They're like, yes. And they heard me say something to somebody else about it. Let me be clear. Since we don't like talking about victims of racism here on this particular program, this is not a situation where I'm doing this. We were discussing the business model that was brought forth by LeVar Ball, victim of racism. He's trying to sell a product through the system of economics without knowing the so-called rules. I can imagine that he probably has read a couple of books, getting advice from people, doing things his
fan,
way.
I'm a fan, by the way. Full disclosure, I'm a fan.
Hey, I understand. Are you a fan of the $495 pricing that he puts on the actual shoe?
Don't care.
What about you, T?
I am not familiar.
So you don't know who LeVar Ball is? Okay. So it's this gentleman, his son plays for UCLA. He's a very, very good. I think his name is Alonzo Ball. His son is named Alonzo. He has three other sons that are very, very good at basketball. Most likely they're projected to go to the NBA. LeVar is the father. LeVar is basically a person that has an entrepreneurial spirit. He wants to be able to practice the so-called capitalist system and to be able to build an empire based off his son's athletic prowess. So he's trying to get into the game of selling shoes. But the reason why he's selling the shoes so high is because he had Nike, Adidas, and what's the other big one? Is it Nike, Adidas, and what's the other one?
Under Armour,
yeah, whatever. Decided that they was not going to go along with this particular venture because at the end of the day, who are you? I don't care how many books you've read. I don't care how many things you think you know about so-called how power moves. Your son just plays basketball. There are over, 1,500? I don't know if there's 1,500 players in the NBA. Less than that. So you're talking about 13 players per team times 30?
I think it's about 695 or 800.
Yeah, it's a very low number of black males that play in the NBA. And then if you subtract that from the European players and the white players in the league, it's less than that. And you're walking in here talking about, you know, what you're demanding. And that's what I was discussing and somebody heard and that they recommended thinking grow rich. And I told him, I said, you know, what's so funny about it, I'm pretty sure that Mr. Ball himself probably has read that book.
That's all he needs to do is take risks. Let it be what it be and keep it moving. It's not even that big. Businesses rise and fall. Businesses sell every day. Businesses succeed every day. Obviously, if you're a black person in business, it's going to be a lot more difficult based off the statistics. Like I said, I don't think it's that big. So jump out there and do what you got to do.
Within the system,
it's an easy conversation. It's fascinating that within the system that people – especially non-white people have an issue with it. I find that in itself interesting when this system is designed to exploit, take advantage. He's going to, you know, send a shoe to China, find some poor Asian people to kill themselves making the shoe, and that's this reality. So it's fascinating that he gets the reaction that he gets because he's a non-white person. From a media perspective, where he's a large black male. He's bombastic, and I compare him, to some other people in the world who have the same traits, and the reaction to him doesn't feel the same. So it's a bit of an experiment just because it's unusual. I haven't seen this in a while, actually. So I find just the reaction in itself interesting. You know, but like I said, I think he just needs to do what he got to do and keep it pushing. So it'll be what it be. Obviously, you know, he'll get something, he'll get nothing, he'll fall. I mean, who cares at the end of the day? But anyway.
Yeah, recognize it as it is, that he's based off one particular black male that has leaped out there and doing what he do, succeed or fail, whatever the case may be. His sons play basketball. And his son most likely is going to be employed by a white billionaire. And not unless he plays for the Charlotte Hornets. And if his son is employed by a white billionaire, guess what? His checks that he's going to receive and use to take care of the whole family is going to be basically in the hands of somebody that's classified as white. The team that he plays for, the city that he goes to, whatever the case may be, whether it's LA or any other city in the United States that has an NBA team. There's no escape in the system, is what I was saying at the end of the day. And that the fact that he's practicing for one particular reason. He has leverage based off physical ability, but it's not real leverage in the true sense of the word.
How many do you think is trying to escape a system?
Everybody.
Which one are they trying to escape?
Escaping to what, though?
Well, Harriet Tubman took you from the South to the North, so you tell me.
Yeah, how did that work out for us? Has it got better? There is Chicago, St. Louis, California. I'll go past here. New York, Philly, Newark, New Jersey.
Please pass this area.
Well, Harriet Tubman is from here. How can I talk about here when she escaped from here?
Yeah, I know, but this place is interesting.
When she left Maryland, this is where she's from.
Yeah, I know.
But a lot of people don't believe that either. Anyway, it's just a whole host. It's a whole host of confusion. So
they have a memorial set up for her. I think they just finished. I think Dr. Umar was saying they just finished up her. They did a small historical thing for her out in Western Maryland somewhere.
But it was in Charles County.
Dorchester? I think it was west, out west. Like, I don't know if it's out in the Cumberland area, but anyway.
Oh, Hagerstown. Okay. Well, that's fine. You know.
When did she go on the $20 bill?
That's what they say. They say that. They say that's the sound of freedom. Freedom. I can't lose. Freedom. You know. That's what it sounds like to me.
My point is, I don't think anyone wants to. At the end of the day, no one wants to give this up. We got to be honest about, you know, I'm not trying, like I said, I'm not necessarily trying to give guidance, you know, but we have to be honest about, you know, most non-white people on the planet is trying to practice either democracy or capitalism or some form of it. People are not saying they've been convinced of this, and this is what we're doing across the globe. Everyone is strivers, right? We're all striving. And really, the mindset of capitalism and the mindset of democracy, from what I understand and what I've experienced, is being an individual, being very selfish, being very narrow-minded, being very focused on trying to get money. And you know, you do things like donate and do other things to kind of offset that thought pattern, but that's really the bottom line of that thought. You know, so-called be successful and that is what validates you during this time frame. 1,000 years from now, I'm sure there'll be something else that validates you. But in this time frame, I think that's what validates you. And can we really try to get some clarity around what does that look like? And what I mean by that is, by you wanting success, does that mean that 100,000 black, for every 100,000 black men, 10,000 are in prison in America? Is that what success looks like for a black person? So whatever we get, whatever few crumbs that we get, from white folks, whatever businesses that we start, whatever ideas that we had that we put together, it requires 10,000 black males per 100,000. Shout out to Antonio. More on that. You know, he did something that messed me up when he mentioned, I don't know if y'all listened to the, this guy speak, but he had mentioned a stat. And, you know, you have to question statistics, obviously, but he had mentioned a stat about in South Africa during apartheid. I think he said for every 100,000 black males in South Africa, they had about 950, roughly, I think, somewhere around there, that was in prison.
During apartheid.
And in 2017, for every 100,000 black Americans, black men, black male Americans, black boys, there's 10,000 in prison. Right, and then you look at you know, you gotta, you know, you, I'm gonna tell you, it doesn't even, I hate to use the word, I don't even want to use the word backwards or going back or anything like that, but if you really assess, you know, I'm looking at the I think it's the Urban League puts out a report every year, and I keep trying to figure out, you know, I it's very difficult to understand what specifically black people are doing while dealing with white folks. Like, I know we have different groups of us, and we all are thinking differently and have different agendas and want different things. And you may, you know, I think that alone is obviously a challenge. And how do we deal with that? You know, is one question I would have for both of y'all. How do you deal with, you know, an environment where, like, if it's up to me, right, I would go to every prison, right, with my people, and we would release people. We would do what is it called when you go and take everybody out of jail? Is there a word for that? But that's what we would do, right? Is that a mindset? Does anyone have the mindset to say, you know what, these are my people? Like, is that a real thing? And since these are my people, then you know what, I'm going to go get them out of jail. I'm going to go to every prison in this country, and I'm going to take out every single person classified as black. Is that a real thing? Is that a real conversation? Or do we have a different view on things based off of what we believe would happen if someone made that decision? Or have we been conditioned to have to ask for things? And if we don't ask for things, what does it look like if we try to take things? Have we ever taken anything in this country? Do we know what that feels like? Do we know what it looks like if we told white folks no more? It's over. Do we know what the response looks like? Or have we taken a different position as a collective group? If there's a such thing as a collective group, I know there's people, and I'm going to tell you what I mean by that, and I'm going to let y'all jump in real quick. But if you think about it, right, this is what I keep trying to understand. Why is George Zimmerman still alive? Like, I look at something very, very basic. If we are a collective group of people, right, even if we're a fragmented group of people and we have different sects that somehow are interconnected, but we all have one mind of some sort, a hive mind, how is this person living? It doesn't make any sense. But it does, I think it sends some sort of signal, or it sends some sort of psychological, like, message, you know, some deep message to us about how things work here. So you have someone, Blovier, I know I'm Blovier a little bit, you have someone, you know, online or on the news talking, and it's like, what are you, you know, what are we actually talking about? You know, when you really get down to the brass tacks, as they say, you know, what are we going to do at the end of the day? You know, what are we going to do? Well, we're gonna get ready and head to break. You know, I quit talking to it out of control. This is the Code Breakers. We're on Black Talk Radio Network. You can, again, reach us at Code Breakers 191. You can definitely call into the show at 1-866-510-9025 if you have a comment. Oh,
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
All right, all right. The Code Breakers is back for the second hour. And, fellas, are you still there? T, DC, are y'all still there?
Here.
I'm here. What's going on?
All right. We have another hour to go discussing racism, white supremacy, discussing the American colony. And I know, do you have anything to say before I kind of line things up for the next hour?
No, that's good. Go ahead.
Yeah, go proceed, sir.
And I want to tie in. DC has, actually somebody else told me about it, but DC had put me on to two things. One was, I think, Assassin's Creed, and I think that's a video game too, if I'm not mistaken. And the other thing was this show that I think that literally just came out called American Gods, and we didn't want to play any clips, I think, because of all the rules that we have to abide by, of course. But did you want to touch on that, DC? And what I want to do, I really kind of want to tie it to, when we talk about the American colony, you know, what are we really talking about, and why is that important? And I feel like, because of how we're taught, obviously this is old conversation, of course, but how we're taught, how we're designed to think, as far as what this place is, and since you're under the people who did what they did, they're gonna obviously gonna they obviously gonna paint things a certain way, at least at the you know, elementary school basic knowledge level. You know, most people have maybe what they rate their people at 6th, 7th, 8th grade education, so very limited information. So, who discovered the place? Who came here? Who started it? Who set it all up? But one thing I always found fascinating is that this is the British Empire, right? And these people, it's funny because, you know, they set this place up, and people like George Washington, I think, who was a military general, decided to say, we're going to do our own thing. I just find it interesting that as a black person or as a person who classified as black, how I have to accept that information. How, you know, in my household, or generally speaking, outside of the outliers, how we generally have to accept that person as a so-called founding father that had my ancestors in bondage, but crazy just because he's a criminal. And I know people have said that before; it's nothing obviously new, but it just always, you know, makes my mind go places, because when I'm thinking about, you know, you have this other empire called the British Empire, and they did what they did, lots of wars, lots of fighting, went around the planet and set up these colonies, and how things sort of matured, even though they're still kind of connected, they fought about it. Clearly, they're still friends, obviously. It's all one thing, but I just wonder, can you tie in American God and kind of Assassin's Creed just into, you know, kind of the before we even get to World War One, World War Two, world powers, advancement in technology, just that kind of that space where, you know, I don't want to say that we were, I hate to use the word we were caught slipping, because I wasn't there in that time frame. And I've only gotten European information about everything when it comes to how things were set up. And I know we have some black folks who've done some great works on studying some things historically, but, you know, when you're under a white empire, I have to question everybody's obviously information. But can you just kind of try to tie that stuff together? If you understand what I'm trying to ask you.
Are you talking about as far as like Assassin's Creed and, you know, the whole premise of the video game?
I think there's a connection between the French, the establishment of the British colony, the 13 colonies, which is really just, you know, we can call them whatever we want to call them, and then the decision to make to transition and say, you know what, we're going to push back, we're going to fight we're going to do our own thing, and then just how we move, kind of move from that space. In other words, there's some sort of tie-in between that and then with us in the belly of the slave ship, and just how all those things kind of converge together. So when you fast forward to 2017, France and Europe, and you know, France and England and America and Europe and Germany today are all somehow in agreement for right now, right, for the last, 70 years. They're in some sort of agreement, they're sharing in the wealth, and they're exploiting non-white people.
Well, I mean, it's quite simply the advent of the French Revolution and the inability to hold together the European colonies. And I mean, people don't know it now, but France was very, very, very powerful. The French Empire, so to speak, was very, very powerful. I mean, they stretched out even as far as, you know, talking about the places on the globe that are now called, Egypt, and, you know, Napoleon basically was a very, very powerful emperor of French culture and things of that nature. You have the so-called Knights of the Templar, which is part of the whole British and the French Empire. There are things that I'm basically trying to tie together based off of how the planet began to formulate into the system of racism, white supremacy, and the reason why race had to be used as a construct to dominate people that were basically of the same ilk. The reason why it was so hard to oppress a large amount of people without having something else that separated them or something that was foreign. I don't think that it was something that was actually thought about until it actually became a thing. Like, you know, and I'm just basically just thinking about racism, which I believe has always been there because people have always thought of themselves in high esteem, I would imagine, especially when they dominated other peoples through violence. Just thought that it probably would be a natural inclination to think of yourself as being more dominant than somebody else. But to create a system based off race and based off that race becoming in within itself a class system where you have monarchies that couldn't hold together in Europe. If you look at European history, there was a lot of fighting, a lot of upheaval, a lot of power being being removed. It looked a lot like what we now call the Middle East. A lot of power fractions, you know, like a lot of things where, you know, one group took over, then that other group that just took over is always in, you know, is subject to get taken over by another class of people. And that goes to the Assassin's Creed, where you get a group of people that can walk around and, you know, they're not easily identifiable, but they can still kill leaders of government, leaders in high standing as far as economics is concerned. But if you do not create a bottom floor for these people to be able to bounce off of, then you can basically have a situation where a system falls apart. Hence the reason why I think racism was something that was needed to establish something such as America. And kind of tying it into American Gods, if I can do that now, there is this program that just came out. It's 2 weeks old. Has a black protagonist, victim of racism, with a white parent. I would imagine, I think he does have a white parent. I hope somebody can inform me or correct me on that if he doesn't. But he's still a victim of racism, somebody that's classified as black universally. And this program is called American God. So this program is basically based off the premise of people having their beliefs and their ideals of whatever their gods of culture are when they came to the so-called New World, which would now be the Americas, and how they brought those particular gods with them and, you know, the personalities of those gods and things of that nature, and how those gods need a sacrifice to become powerful and to remain relevant in the so-called New World. So speaking on that, there was a slave ship called Coming to America. I mean, not Coming to America, but the name of it, I guess the whole show was called Coming to America. And it started on a slave ship. And on the slave ship, there's a spider in the form of a god, which I guess would be called Anisi. I know I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. Please forgive me. My African brethren, if you're listening to this program, I am a victim of racism. And you're going to have to bear with me. But anyway, the first 5 minutes, which was basically illustrated through a dialogue that their god is informing them there is a person that is praying to their old god and not understanding the situation that they're in. And as he is praying to his particular god that he know of, which is Anisi, and he's telling him, you know, if you get us out of this situation, we will, give you, silk and things of that nature to kind of give you the highest of praise. All you need to do is just let me go, this and that other. And then Anisi shows up in man form and he kind of like gives the lay down of what is now going to become your reality. And this is what we're talking about, where people that considered themselves something else comes to the realization that now you have been dominated. Now you're going to be defined as black people. And he says something very, very interesting, because in the middle of his diatribe, he said, well, you people don't even know that you're black yet. And he paused because he knew that the whole understanding of what was going to happen now was going to be a whole new paradigm. Whatever you realize or whatever you believe that you were before, prior to this, is no longer going to be the case. There's going to be hundreds of years of just mistreatment, which we still see to this particular day, in the situation where people are still being mistreated based off the system of racism, white supremacy. So how did this all ties in together? It kind of goes into the place where I like to kind of go into my whole diatribe and shout out to the cows and Context of White Supremacy, Gus T. Renegade. And you know, this is a thing that is something that he stresses a lot. White people are not confused about racism, white supremacy. And that's what that whole scene illustrated to me, because watching that scene of him go and let those victims of racism know that now you're going to be put into a situation, you have been captured, you are no longer whoever you thought you were, you're going to be black people. That's what you are now. You're no longer the Ashanti, you're no longer the Zulu, you're no longer the Xhosa, you're no longer the Mende people. You are now black people. And this is what it's going to be. And you're going to be in perpetual torment. And just to show how basically where he said, well, if we burn down the ship, and I just looked at that as being metaphorical, because I think that this is what a lot of black people come to. They don't know what to do with this particular system. So I hear all this bad news. What do you expect me to do? And when he gave him the rhetorical question, or not the rhetorical question, because he answered it, one of the slaves, the main slave that was having an issue with the new paradigm, basically when he asked him, you know, you suggest that we burn down the ship, but if we burn down the ship, then we die too. And Orlando Jones paused and looked at him and said, you're already dead. So it's just amazing just how everything went into that scene and how they kind of like broke down the American black experience to me, as far as like being defined. And we talk about it here all the time, that blackness is a forced classification. It's not something that was organically agreed upon by victims of racism. Like this is what it is now. This is a paradigm shift. And to redefine yourself in a paradigm shift when you didn't initially create it is problematic, because you're going to try to mistreat other people that is forced into your group. which you do not have the ability to, you don't have the ability to enforce wholesale. So it keeps you into perpetual conflict with different people that are forced into your classification, which keeps us in this whole situation of having different ideas about what to do with the system. Oh, I'm going to go my way. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You talk about racism, white supremacy too much. I'm a joke over here. I'm over here making money. I'm not really black. I'm biracial. I'm triracial. I'm octoroon. I'm whatever. You know, I'm Afro-Latino. So you get black people describing themselves in a black diaspora different ways. But at the end of the day, what Anisi said to these victims of racism, because that's our ancestors. So what he said to them was nothing but the truth. So you guys, you know, I know I kind of went, I hope it kind of tied together and it made sense, but you know, did you watch it? I'm going to go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I was saying there.
Go ahead, Paradise.
I was just saying, what I was thinking is, do you come to grips with what it means to be black? So do we come to grips to say, well, we know that we're in an empire that was established and set up by Europeans who now call themselves white. And they have all the systems and layers and levels of their realities of how they interact with each other, poor, rich, England, Poland, wherever you came from, your name changes, all the struggles and strifes and things you went through. At the same time, you're still taking more and more control of the planet. So while those events are taking place, you have this thing called Negroes, Africans, black people, et cetera, and different variations of those people. Do you come to grips with the reality that they've conquered the planet? A large percentage of us is part white through mostly rape. Because I know some people have came to grips with it clearly, and they're going to participate. What battles are we fighting? If you are maybe anti-capitalism, anti-democracy, anti-American, anti-West, anti-racism, where you're saying, I reject all of it. I reject capitalism. I have to live in it. I have to eat. I have to survive. I still reject capitalism. I reject racism. I reject anything white folks have set up. We don't care where you got it from. We don't care that we're going to have to set up something new, but how do you get to the point where you're going to start telling yourself and telling others, why are we doing this? You know, why are we putting ourselves in these positions? And what makes it, I think, difficult is the level of mistreatment that's being pressed upon us by white folk while simultaneously us trying to practice what they've taught us, what we learned from them, at the same time pretending that they didn't really necessarily teach us and that we figured this all out on our own and what we're doing is okay, that it's not racism, that we're just trying to have our own civilization, do our own thing. Like, we're dealing with so many, and I'm saying it that way because those are different people speaking in my mind, right? Different people have said, you know, dealing with all the different scenarios from trying to set up a banking system, trying to set up things to better our school systems, et cetera, all the things that we're trying to do while still being under somebody's empire, not calling it an empire, right? You call it America, America the Great, America the Beautiful. You know, you create these mindsets and these ideologies based off white people allowing these events and these mindsets to take place. We're mimicking and copying their environment. At the same time, you have a section of us who are rejecting a lot of what they're talking about, but still trying to practice some version of it. We're just not calling it whiteness. We're not calling it capitalism. We may be calling it other words to try to say that we're not really doing that. You know, we're just trying to take care of our people or whatever. But if I'm ignorant, it would make some sense, right? But if you understand that, you know, who's really in charge of everything, can you really do all the things that you're saying that you're really doing? Are you being very honest? Are you really making sense here? If someone has an empire and their main goal is to mistreat and exploit the planet to consume as much as possible, to build as big of an empire as possible, build an empire so big that it's on Mars, that it's a space station, that it's so massive, it's so vast that you can control all things on the planet. You can monitor everybody on the planet. When you have a, when you're under people directly that has these thought patterns, that has these mindsets, and then you're trying to mimic those things in different versions, calling them possibly different things, calling them the same thing, saying if they can do it, I can do it because of how you're looking at the universe. How do you deal with all of those moving parts, all of those events taking place? You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of different things happening here. Because you have black folks who believe in a lot of different things, right? You know, you have your religious people. I mean, there's so many sects of us, and we're all looking at things in a slightly different way. And I'm not talking about unifying anything, by the way, because if a section of us decide to make a move and do some things, we're going to have to put a lot of people down. We're going to have to deal with a lot of different people across the globe, to be honest with you. There's non-white folks on the whole planet that want to maintain this. White folks have put a lot of black people in Africa, in charge of Africa, in charge of Asia, in charge of the Americas outside of the United States and Canada. They put a lot of people in charge that look like the people from those places. But anyway, I digress.
Would you...
This was some years ago. I was having a conversation with two people who were who would be forced into the classification of black. And interesting thing about the conversation, one was from the so-called U.S., and the other was from so-called Ghana. And just hearing the conversation, it started turning into an argument because the so-called black person from the U.S. was saying that, you know, Ghanaian, if I'm saying that correctly, but they were saying that the African person was black, and the African person saying, no, I'm from Ghana, you know, I'm not black. What are you talking about? And so they went back and forth, arguing, which it obviously ended nowhere. But what's interesting is, because this alludes to the point which is being stated about being forced to the classification of black, and that was probably over a decade ago. So I'm not sure if I think people have been more embracing, if I can use that word, of using the term black to identify themselves worldwide. At least that's the trend that I've been seeing over the years. Most people, it's interesting because that's a false dichotomy. I mean, obviously the Berlin Conference set up by Europeans, not one single African sitting in the conference when they split up Africa and literally divvied it up amongst the European nations and named it as they desired to and they wished to, you know, separating peoples that had familial ties with imaginary borders. And so you had one person who derived their identity from, when you boil it down, to the Berlin Conference. You know, they were, I'm sure lots of people in their land were slaughtered and massacred, and they were able to afford an identity out of that. They have a flag, they have land, if you want to say that, they have government, they have all these things that were given to them and taught to them on how to run it. And then, and on the other hand, you have somebody classified as black, who they may be from a state in the U.S., but they don't typically have a flag or a government per se. But they're arguing back and forth with one another about who's black and who's African. And that can continue forever. That argument could go on forever. And so not getting outside of those realms of being trapped into those ideologies is dangerous. It doesn't get past symptoms, right? You're trying to get to the root cause of things. And it's interesting how so-called white people, especially those in power, have created this type of situation instead of this type. It's almost it's on autopilot. you know, it doesn't require but tweaks here and there. You know, you put, we're coming up on break, but you put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill, I think that's happening in the next few years. And people will be ecstatic about it, especially so-called black people. Anyway, this is the Code Breakers. We're going to the break, and we'll be back with you shortly here. Thanks for listening.
Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, we're back. Code Breakers is back. I think one question I definitely would ask is, When are black people, and I'm not even saying the whole group of people who are classified as black, who identify as black, African, or I would just say non-white people on the planet, you know, when you know, what time frame will we just start to reject whiteness? What time frame will it, when will we, you know, get to the point where, regardless of how we're being treated good, or however you want to define how you're being treated, when will we get to the point, and I don't want to really even get an answer to this question in a sense, you know, I'm just thinking like, you know, when do you get to the point, does that say a lot when I have to say to myself, is there a point that you get to as a non-white person that says, you know what, we have to put an end to whiteness. We have to start to reject whiteness. And I know these things are happening. I know that the challenge that whites will always have, that's why they're always doing things, to maintain this, is that there's black people and other non-white people who are, however you want to identify yourself, that is fighting against the oligarchs, the World Banks, the Europeans, etc. I know that there's millions of people out here who know that what they're doing on this planet is wrong. I know that. And I know that it's a challenge as well for us to obviously try to figure out things as a group because of how things are structured. But I do think that we are in, I think it's an interesting time just because I think we can get a somewhat of a sense these days that people on the planet, you know, a lot of people I think are not happy with the way things are. People are aware. People are able to see who's being treated the way they probably should be treated and who isn't. So anyway, I don't want to ramble too much. DC, did you have anything on what T was just saying?
Yeah, I'm glad that he brought up the Berlin conference. I hope that everybody would, you know, don't trust. This. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just say this real quick. And one thing I want non-white people to remember, and we have examples of this outside of what I'm about to say. But if you think about, when he mentioned Berlin, and you think about the and Dr. Wells, and you know, she was able to predict many things. And one thing that she harps on is the way the Jews of the Semites of the Jewish religion and how they were treated in Germany, how they started out being treated, how they was allowed to assimilate, and how when the people of that dominant society at some point made a new decision and said we're going to do things differently, and how vulnerable you are when you don't have control of an environment. So it doesn't matter how much we do in this environment. We will not dictate it. We will not control it. We have to destroy it, period. I just wanted to say that. We got to remember those people and how they were done by another white society, by an extreme white society in a sense. Very physical, very direct, and I don't think there was much confusion with that.
You know, when you're dealing with mentally illness that has been generational now for years, things going unspoken, pathology being developed. Pathology is just things that you do in families where you make adjustments into your so-called reality. And reality now is just what white folks allow us to do globally, because that's really what it is. There's not one country, European country, that has to bend to any particular group that is not white. Not one. It's devastating. When you look at the poorest so-called countries on the planet, third world countries, all these particular places are places where our majority of people that will be classified as not white, forced into the classification of being black. And you think about globally how the system moves, how it has developed. There are some things that are very useful, I think, to get past a lot of this. First things first, stop blaming black people for the issues that we're having. What you're seeing is somebody that's been extremely devastated, most likely, and they're having a very adverse reaction to the system, regardless of whatever you're seeing. Surprised that it's not more of us that have lost our minds, that are not even able to function properly. I mean, it's amazing, really, when you're being constantly attacked by a system. And I know people don't look at it that way, but that's exactly what has happened to us. Secondly, start to, and these are just suggestions. This is not something that I would just say, well, you have to do it. But this is just something that I would start to do. Start to get a little bit more information about how things basically were derived. That's what I would tell people. So anytime somebody says something to you about, hey, you know, do this, do that, do this, and then you're like, oh, well, where did you pick that up from? Well, where did you think about that from? And especially when it comes down to when you have to participate and do other things. Like I said, a lot of times when people are trying to go into a venture where it demands other people's participation, you have to be coerced in a certain kind of way, which means that you have to be motivated to support somebody's vision, somebody's ideas, or whatever the case may be. And most of the time, when people do that, they are compromised. And it's just a natural thing, because people have to survive. We are in a feeding ground. We are in a feeding system. So, yeah, that's just pretty much my thoughts about that. I really do. I think the reading is way, way more important than watching television. But I do think that there are some tenets of what you can take away. If you're going to watch TV anyway, you know, keep yourself, you know, aware of when the system basically rears its head, because it's everywhere, it's in everything that we do. So that's pretty much my thoughts about just finishing up on that topic about the American Gods and, you know, French Revolution deal.
Okay. Did you, I know we had talked about, but T, did you have anything that you wanted to finish up? I know you were still in some thought before we went to break. Did you want to say anything else, or? I know he was on mute. I know he muted himself.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I took you off mute. He was on mute for some reason.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, no, that's all good. No, we can move forward with whatever you guys wanted to discuss. Close out the show.
Yeah, I think we got about 20 minutes or so left. It's always.
What about being born to compromise? Since you're talking about being a compromise, can you expound on that?
I mean, yeah, I think it's all really connected. And you know, it's so funny. I put that bullet point on there, but it was funny just because, when you're thinking about it, what makes it so, like, you kind of think back to your life. So you know, the way we do this program obviously is more conversational. We just kind of really help each other out, just trying to get some clarity on things. And I was thinking about very simple things like, you know, just being born into the environment and having to be set up right from birth. You know, the toys that you get. Like, I keep thinking to myself, and again, it could be my own conspiracy, but even the toys you get, the flashcards you get, the way your family tells you when you're 6 months and 8 months, how you should be acting, how you should be walking, what you should be doing. 1, 2 years old, where you should be in your life, how you should be, you know, telling your parents, you know, how I should be dealing with my child. 3 and 4 and 5, where they should be at, what, and, you know, depending on what time frame, we're born in this time frame. So, you know, you're having kids, you know, who are obviously really young or kids a little bit older, you know, certain expectations and how they should be. You're told that, and it's such a narrow view on, you know, on how to function. And so, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, you're coming out the womb already, you know, your parents are, not every parent, obviously, but the majority of parents are already putting you it's not their fault, obviously, but putting you in a situation where they're trying to get you to survive, where they're trying to help you, you know, make it through the system to have, I think they always say, like, a comfortable life trying to convince you of different things. And that's what I mean when I say born compromised. You know, you're starting out right from the beginning, being told or being conditioned on how to interact with the environment. You know, the choices that you make as a kid, and you know, obviously these days, if you have kids, you want to put them in lots of programs. If your school system even has programs to put them in, depending on obviously what area you're living in, the city or the rural area, the south, north, or the west, or whatever, or the Midwest, and kind of what you kind of get walked through, what your family takes you through, and then what does the school system, that environment, what does it do to you? How does it work you through the environment? And all while you're being compromised, all while you're being exploited, all while you're being conditioned to think a certain way, to act a certain way, to function a certain way, and then dealing with all the fallout from that. You know, all the black males who end up in prison or with a record, and then how does that interact with the environment and why that exists? Trying to figure out, do you blame yourself or do you blame your family or do you blame your economic situation? And you know, and then producing more of you. You know, so, you know, not only are you compromising yourself, but, you know, obviously if you're young and you have kids, you may have been a bit naive, obviously, but based off what your skin looks like, what the expected treatment will be, what the statistics are around your child, and still going to produce these children and allow them to interact in the environment. I find the most fat, and I don't want to harp on the birth thing too much. You got me going down that road in my mind, but you know, I think that non-white people, specifically black people, really have to think about things when they have children. And I think, and I was telling someone this earlier, just to kind of get some reactions on, you know, I want people to think about something. It's something I've been thinking about lately, which is, you send your kids to a school system. Think, and I know there's laws and rules in place, et cetera, why you have to do these things. But you send your kid, literally, to a so-called failing school system. The school that they're getting sent to, as an example, drugs, guns, violence, you know, we know why it's produced. That's the environment you put your child in, a very violent environment that's been set up. And you're told to send your kids there to get an education. And then your kid maybe makes it to the 12th grade. All these things, constructs that they've set up. Not saying these constructs aren't valid and that they don't work, depending on how it's set up, who supports it, and where it's located, and what time frame we're talking about. But in this time frame, dealing with black people in this country, you know, a lot of us are forced, it almost seems, to stick their kids into a system that's already it's messed up. And I just find it weird that I would do that, and I'm talking about myself, I would do that from K through 12. And then I have a 17-year-old that reads at a 7th grade level. I wasted 12 years of their life. I put them through this gauntlet that, to me, still don't prepare them for the reality that's out there as you transition into adulthood based off of the system and how they have instruction about, you know, as far as what's adults and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and how all of it works. Everything is an interesting thing. So being born in an environment, then you're forced to put your kid into this thing called a school system, and then this federally and state-funded school system creates all these other pathologies, sex, drugs, you know, violence, being mistreated by teachers, being given pieces of information. Because, you know, what's funny about black people in America, when we're trying to practice what they're practicing, we're trying to mimic what they're mimicking, when we died and fought, from my perspective, to be equal to them. Think about that. We want to be equal to them. That's what I've been told my whole life. I want to be equal to them. Has anyone ever stopped and said, why do I want to be equal to you? You know, is the cookie that good? It's chasing the carrot that good? It's building a massive hotel, building a massive skyscraper. Is it that important to us? You know, it's a hard thing to think about when you separate yourself from blackness, from whiteness, and just kind of try to take a look at, so you're telling me that my family and I have been fighting and dying to be equal to white people. The murderers, the destroyers of worlds, the destroyers of cultures, the people who pretend they didn't massacre 500 million Native people. Like, I want to be equal to that. What they're doing is G-O-O-D. Like, that's exactly what I want. Trying to understand that is a challenge. But I'll stop right there. But that's what I meant, Keith.
Okay. Yeah, that's heavy, man. What's interesting when you talk about people putting their children through the indoctrination. One, pretty much, I don't know what that was, but pretty much have to go through indoctrination and then find some way out of it. Like myself, I don't know how I found the way out. Maybe there was something else there, because I always felt like things weren't quite right, you know, from a very young age.
But
what I'm trying to get at is finding your way out of that indoctrination. You understand indoctrination. In other words, if you took someone who, let's say, was never exposed to this, let's say it came from a whole other planet, they were in a bubble almost, and you thrust them at, let's say, the age, I don't know, maybe like in their pre-pubescent age, how different, to me, they probably would not be able to break the indoctrination. You pretty much have terrible about it. You have to pretty much subject yourself to the indoctrination in order to come out if you can.
You break it up a little bit, too.
To it.
Yeah, okay. you break You breaking up, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you better now. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so what I was saying, I don't know where it cut out, but you have to subject yourself, your children, to the indoctrination in order to hopefully come out of it and in order to better understand the indoctrination that you went through. Because if you don't go through it, how can you truly have the understanding? Obviously, difficult part in that. I know Paradox said the defects. That's a whole nother deep conversation. But even going through the indoctrination, how does one, you know, is that left a chance? I don't know. But how does one find their way out of it and then try to decipher what they've been through their whole life? Because there are things that happen, I'm sure, in everyone's life that's listening on this call that we can't quite remember, but it might come up one day. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, I remember, when I was 8 years old, you know, I used to ride a bike, or I went fishing or something, or whatever pops up in your mind. It's stuff that is kind of conjured up that you forget about. But a lot of those experiences that we went through, especially in the indoctrination part, you know, you're talking about, we had a show on, we kind of alluded to so-called white women as teachers in school, you know, the indoctrination that we were subjected to in elementary school by those so-called white women. Stuff that we can't even remember that we might have gone through, that they might have put us through. And the unconscious and the subconscious actions that we manifest now, even in our adult lives. How does one locate those moments and then and address them? Because self-reflection to me is key in trying to put pieces of the puzzle together in this type of system. If you don't have a self-examinatory process where you go within yourself and say, you know, examine your actions. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? Why am I thinking this way? You know, I'm looking at the news is telling me this thing, but something else is going on. If I'm talking to someone, they're telling me one thing, and I almost want to believe them. And I'm kind of convinced to going over to this side, but I know better. But I might go along just to get along. So it's interesting that you have to be. And I know I said it before, but you have to be subjected to the indoctrination to even come out of the side having an understanding of the indoctrination. So it's very interesting, and just trying to figure out, for people who do have children, trying to figure out how to, you know, inculcate within them the understanding of how the system works that you are putting them into. You know, because it potentially asks the question, well, why are you putting me into this particular scenario when you know the outcome? So unanswered questions and things that could come up that potentially may need to be addressed. But I did want to touch on that in terms of being born compromised.
Yeah. I'll leave the floor. I would say this: when you look at the way Black Americans are being treated in this country, the way we're being treated, the amount of Black people who are in and out of prison, the amount of Black people who are on some sort of probation or papers, the amount of Black people who have gotten hooked on drugs, the amount of Black people who have been given guns to kill and shoot each other, the amount of Black people who have been impoverished in this country, we're talking about levels. And I'm gonna shout out Antonio again. But just putting it in perspective of just the level of mistreatment, the level of suffering that a group of Black people clearly don't really grasp, says a lot about this environment. I need Black folks at some point. We all, not all of us, but a group of us, have to come to some conclusions, some hard facts about sacrifice, about what we're willing to give up, how hard are we going to push ourselves, and, you know, what level are we going to take it to stop our mistreatment. You don't get to give a few black folks some cookies and some goodies, a few mansions, a few whips, and then want to pretend that you're not master turned and just the mental illness that you've created, just the amount of dysfunction, just the amount of terrorism that you put. Like I was telling DC today, for the Klan, for the Ku Klux Klan, just specifically that group, I know there's other groups, for them not to be labeled as a terrorist group and treated the way Al-Qaeda members are treated, or even if you mention Muslim terrorism, any type of language around that, the fear, the treatment, and the kind of going into the Guantanamo Bay, et cetera, all the things, if you are a non-white person in this country and you don't understand how whites operate at the gutter level, which is a physical, dealing with a Klans member who is going to be physical, who is going to be direct, and then a major corporation who's going to do it in a different kind of way, or a major bank, or the federal government, or the state government, or the governor of a state, or the mayor of a city. All the different ways, or the teacher in the school, as you mentioned, T, all the different ways that we're being mistreated, violated, terrorized, and murdered. And we're talking about overwhelmingly 70, 80%, 90% of us. Just because you may allow a fraction of us to somehow get access to whiteness is not going to last. It is not going to last. We're going to have to deal with white folks putting black people in prison. We're going to have to really get to that. You know, you're going to have to get out of churches, you're going to have to get out of these companies and get out of your, whatever you're dealing with that's distracting you, and really start to look at how your own folks are being treated. And we're going to have to deal with this. And I'm going to tell you why I say that. It's really going to be for survival at the end of the day. When it's at any point in time, white folks can make some very hard decisions. When you know different, when they put the Japanese in internment camps in this country, they can make very, very hard decisions on dealing with us. They're putting millions of us in prison. They're dealing with, like, I can't, I'm a, man, anyway, I'm going to stop right there before we go another hour. But, DC, did you have anything? I know we're getting down to the end. I don't mean to be ranting too much here.
No, that's good stuff, fellas. The only thing I have is, you know, I know that, you know, just to what you guys, you know, I agree wholeheartedly. We just have to come down to being honest, I guess, at the end of the day. And, you know, it's not hidden. None of this stuff is hidden from plain sight. It's there for you to get the information. But when you get it, just allow yourself to be honest with yourself. That's the best thing I can tell anyone. You can feel any kind of way about, you know, why they did what they did or what came about, you know, what was the thought pattern of this and that the other. But the fact is that, you know, there is a system that's in place that benefit the few people that classify or call themselves white. There's no denying that. Now, the thing is that we do live in that system. We are adjusted in that particular system. We are, like you guys just clearly illustrated, born compromised. The only thing that I would tell victims of racism to do is just to be honest. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that I know what the answers are. I mean, you know, we sat up here and discussed mentalities and do the broader scope of the whole deal. But, you know, those are for you to kind of, you know, delve into your own psyche and seek knowledge for however you want to seek it. We're not here to kind of, you know, impose our views upon you. We just hope that we can kind of like at least get you to look into some things and from a different perspective. And, you know, we're not trying to gather any kind of followers or get people to do this or that and that. That's not what we're on. Like I said, I think that we're way past that now. So at this particular point, I'm all about getting victims less confused. And then we can begin from there. But until victims of racism get less confused about, you know, what the system is and how it works, you know, this will continue to be the state of affairs. But it's clear that this is what the system is due to project. So the system is working the way it should work when you look at it. So they A plus, just like how Dr. Wilson used to tell us when we used to go see her. And you know, shout out to Dr. Welsing and the Welsing Institute. Sabrina Johnson still does a wonderful job, you know, still, you know, continuing the legacy of Dr. Welsing, and, you know, Mr. Fuller is still on the counter racist grind. So we have people that have the information that still share and still do plenty of things to try to give clear, concise information about the system. You know, and I just end the way we've been ending, you know, for the last couple of episodes. Show black people empathy. Try to stop name calling. And guess what? You know, we're at the top of that list. So we hope that, you know, you took some tidbits away from the program. If you did, you know, hope that you got some views that can help you deconstruct the system. If not, then, you know, keep it pushing. But this is the Code Breakers. I'm D.
It's T.
And this is Paradox.
And until next time, peace.